So I chose this passage because it compares God to a mother hen. Did you hear that? Jesus compared himself to a mother hen of all things. And so it brings to mind, this passage is very brief, but it brings to mind several questions. The first is, why was Herod trying to kill Jesus? Because the Pharisees try to come and warn him, which is another big question. Why would the Pharisees, of all people, the ones who didn't like Jesus, the ones who didn't trust Jesus, the ones who wanted Jesus to stop what he was saying and doing, why would they come and warn him and try to help him when they found out what Herod's plan was? And the third question is, why wouldn't the people of Jerusalem come to Jesus? When he said, all I want to do is spread my wings over you like a mother hen to protect you, why won't they come to me? These are all really big questions, so let's see if we can tackle them. First of all, it helps to know that during this time period, when Jesus was moving through Jerusalem and in the areas surrounding Jerusalem, he was causing a lot of trouble for the people in charge. Now, at this point, John the Baptist had already perished by Herod's own hand. And as Jesus was moving around and he was healing people and he was feeding people and he was educating people and organizing people, Herod started to get a little nervous. And you can see why. You can see why. If you have an educated, empowered, united population that's starting to really become suspicious of the powers that be, that's a dangerous situation for Herod. But in addition to that, the reason why Herod was so worried about Jesus is because he honestly believed that Jesus was someone who had come back from the dead. He thought he might be John the Baptist. He thought he might be Elijah or one of the other big name prophets from the Old Testament like Moses. Now, can you imagine if one of those guys suddenly showed up in town, how the population might sway? Herod's authority would just go right out the window. And so he was nervous about this, so he did begin to plot. And in response to this, when Jesus finds out, his response is so casual. He says, oh yeah, you know, that's great and all that Herod wants to kill me, but you know, I'm booked solid for the next 3 days. I've got healings to do. I've got people to feed. I've got groups I've got to meet with. There's people I have to bring together. And then I've got to go. I got to be in Galilee by Thursday. So, you know, he's just going to have to wait, he says. Can you imagine? He says this because he says, until my entire mission is completed, I'm not scheduled to die. I have things to do before that point. So Herod will just have to wait till I come back to Jerusalem. When people start shouting, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord, then Herod can get ready. And that, of course, is when he comes in later and comes into Jerusalem with the palms waving on the donkey. That's exactly what people shout. And 1 week later, he's gone. So in response to this, Jesus also turns everything on his head. Because not only does he have a casual, flippant answer, he says, thanks so much for trying to protect me. I don't need it. I, on the other hand, am trying to protect you because I see bad things coming down the pipeline for the future. I see corruption. I see violence. I see the temple falling. I am trying to protect you, Pharisees. You don't need to protect me. And he turns that relationship right on its head with this wonderful metaphor of him being a mother hen. Now, have any of you ever kept chickens? I've kept chickens, and they can fit a lot of little chickies under their wings if you've ever seen them. And so there's this very feminine, very soft, very protective answer to the vision of the fox that he calls Herod. Now let me tell you something about mother hens. Mother hens protect, mother hens comfort, and mother hens unite their chickies. Unlike foxes, foxes are strong, they are cunning, and they are fast, but they have to sneak around at night to do what they are going to do. Mother hens don't do that. And so there's this wonderful image. So let's talk about that. You know, there was a point years ago, right after I gave birth to my daughter, Faye, when I was at home with this newborn infant, just a day after she was born. And all of, and it was hot, it was August. She was born on the 28th of August, so it was a very hot day in Oregon. It was in the hundreds that day. So we had left the front door open to let a breeze go through the house. And while I was sitting there with my infant daughter in her bassinet, just an arm's reach away from me, a woman came charging into the house. A woman I had never seen before, wearing only one shoe, came running into the house, turned around, shut the door and locked it, and said, help me, four men are chasing me. And all of a sudden, there was a woman in my living room that I had never seen before. And for those of you who have given birth, you may remember that those first several days after you give birth, you're a little disoriented. You're a little tired. Your brain does not work the same way it normally works. And so I didn't have an instant reaction to this. I was a little discombobulated, and I was trying to decide whether or not this woman really genuinely needed help or whether or not she, in fact, was the danger. And I didn't know what to think. And so my mother was there, and she started to call the police. But in the meantime, this woman was all over the place, and she was asking to use the bathroom, and she was terrified, and she's trying to shut the drapes in the living room so nobody could see inside the house. And I didn't know what to trust. Do I assume she is safe and the danger is outside, or do I assume that she is unsafe and the safety would be to get out of the house or to get her out of the house? And in this moment, Our cat walked through the living room. And that cat, every single hair on its back was standing straight up. And its tail was a bottle brush. It was straight out, complete and total bottle brush. And he was stalking after her, following her into the bathroom. And I knew this woman was not safe in that moment. I didn't know what to think, but my cat made it clear. Has anyone ever had that, where their cat or dog responded to somebody and you knew whether or not this was a good person or a bad person? It turns out that the woman was on drugs. In fact, nobody was chasing her, and she was trying to get into our bathroom to go through the medicine cabinet. And the police escorted her out very calmly once they got there several minutes later. When Jesus talks to the Pharisees about protecting them, he's giving them a very clear message, because they didn't know who to trust. They wanted to trust Herod. They were probably skeptical of Rome. And then there's this guy in town that's running around talking about truths and talking about the Bible in the way that they had never heard before. And they didn't know what to think. They're trying to decide. And they saw this commonality with him. They realized Herod was going too far in trying to hurt Jesus, but that didn't mean they were on the same side. But all of a sudden, in this moment, with Jesus' reaction, I'm not worried about this, I'm trying to protect you, they suddenly saw the truth. They suddenly saw who was the good guy and who was the bad guy. Because he could have written them off. He could have told them to go away. He could have said, I've seen you guys, and I don't like you guys. I don't trust you guys. Instead, he becomes mother hen to them. Just like a mother hen, he protects them, and they respond. I'm going to let you in on a little secret about me you may not know. I think we're recording. I'm a little worried about that. I am a die-hard Buffy the Vampire Slayer fan. Die-hard. I've seen every episode at least 3 times. The musical episode, I could sing you all the words to all the songs right now, but I'm not going to do that today. Maybe another sermon. And there was a point when, several years ago, I was watching the entire 7 series from start to finish. Now, the thing about this show is that at the end of each season, Joss Whedon, the creator, never knew whether or not he would be renewed for the next season. So he always left it on a cliffhanger that was unbelievable, so that the fans would get so riled up wanting to know what would happen next, they would pressure the studio to renew the contract, and then he would come back the following season. And these cliffhangers were unbelievable. I'll just tell you right now, if you haven't seen it, Buffy dies like 3 separate times. One person. And what would happen would be, I would be watching these, you know, throughout the week, and then about 10 o'clock, I would be on the last 2 or 3 episodes of the season. And then I couldn't stop, and I'd say, well, just one more. Well, then it's 1 o'clock in the morning. Well, just one more. Well, then it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and then she dies, or something happens, and that's the end of the season, and it's 2 o'clock in the morning. And I found myself weeping on my couch in the dark at 2 o'clock in the morning, more times than I can count, at least 7 times, because there's 7 seasons. And while I was sitting there absolutely beside myself, no one in the house would be aware. Everybody slept right through it except the dog. Max, the dog, would come out and hear me and whine with me. And sometimes he would howl, and I would weep, and he would howl, and I would cry, and he would whine, and we would just hold each other until the next morning, after our period of darkness, when the new dawn broke and the video store opened up again and we could go get the next season. This is how mother hens work. This is how Jesus works, by comforting, by standing with, by saying, maybe I can't fix your pain, but I can stand with you and walk with you through it until the darkness passes and the video store opens again, or whatever your personal tragedy happens to be. Now, my friend tells a story about a time when she was at a party. And it was a big party. It was throughout this house. You know, there's things all over, outside in the backyard, in the patio, in the front yard, on the lawn, in the kitchen, in one of the family rooms, in the living room. Lots of people. There are about 50 to 100 people spread out all through this house. And as the party went on through the night, they noticed something strange. At a certain point, people started spilling their drinks. And they realized somehow, as they were sitting there, that this dog was circling around them. And they realized they were standing in the living room, elbow to elbow, jostling each other, trying to drink their drink and have their conversation and eat their snacks while they were bumping into each other, because they were so close they could feel each other's breath on their faces. And it took them a few minutes to figure out what had happened. The owner had an Australian sheepdog that had slowly, over the course of 2.5 hours, rounded up all the people, little by little, nudging them in the back of their legs, getting in their way, you know, pushing them a little bit, slowly but surely, without realizing it, every single person had been herded into the living room, into a nice tight circle, and the dog was going around and around and around, keeping them there, uniting them. And they were still having a great time. They were spilling their drinks on each other, but they were having a great time, united in fellowship, safe and protected together. Now, Jesus was trying to do the same thing by uniting people, bringing them together from all areas, from different places, to dine together, to break bread together, to have fellowship together, and to have such a wonderful, positive, loving experience that everyone would want to be a part of it. This is the notion of the city on the hill that is a beacon. So, the big question is, still remaining, why wouldn't all the little chickies come to Jesus so that he could show them this, protect them, comfort them, and unite them when they desperately needed to be protected? When they were so hopeless, they needed that comfort. And when they were so scattered and divided, that they needed that unification. It's a really good question. It's one that is carried with us over the past two millennia. Why don't people go to a God that simply says, all you have to do is come to me? If you are feeling frightened, if you are in danger, if you are grieving, if you are hopeless, if you are isolated, all you have to do is come to me. Now, here's what I think. I think that if we can learn who to trust from a cat or a dog, if we can allow ourselves to be comforted through the darkest night by a puppy dog who whines and howls with you, if we can be united in fellowship and joy by an Australian sheepdog, maybe, just maybe, there is a hope that we might come and allow ourselves to be protected and comforted and united by a God who simply wants to spread his giant wings over us and gather us together. Can I get an amen to that?